ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ. And the chapter is entitled as the characteristics of Rishabhdev. Yesham khalu mahayogi bharato jeshta shreshta guna asidyena dam Varsham Bharatam iti vyapadishanti. And just again, you can tell that. I don't have a fourth line. So it doesn't go with the meter that we normally go with. Yeah, this is the difficulty with the new meter in Canto 5. Let's try that. Yesham khalu mahayogi bharato.
Yesham khalu mahayogi bharato.
Jesha shreshta guna asidyena dam. Varsham Bharatam iti vyapadishanti. Yesham,
of whom,
khalu, indeed, Mahayogi, a very highly exalted devotee of the Lord. Jeshtaha, the eldest. Shreshtaha
Gunaha,
qualified with the best attributes.
Asi
was. Yena, by whom? Idam, this. Varsham,
planet.
Bharatam,
Bharata.
Iti,
thus.
Vyapadishanti, people call. Translation in Purport Vaishnava Prabhupada. Of Rishabhdev's 100 sons, the eldest, named Bharata, was a great exalted devotee qualified with the best attributes. In his honor, this planet has become known as Bharat Varsh. Let's just write that down, yeah? Just so we can digest it. How many sons do Rishabhdev have?
100.
Because we just read it, yeah? Of Rishabhdev's 100 sons, the eldest was named Bharata. So we don't know the 99 yet, but we know the eldest was Bharata. And what were the attributes of Maharaj Bharata? Was a great exalted devotee. So that's his attributes. And because he was great and exalted devotee, what happened? What was the last part of the verse? The planet Bharat was named after him as Bharat Bharat. So sometimes, you know, when people achieve something glorious, then some monument, you know, some souvenir, something gets, you know, created for the memory of them. So here Bharat, King Bharat, who was one of the 100 sons of Rishabhdev. Rishabhdev is Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was, because he was so exalted and qualified, that the planet Earth or the planet got named after him as Bharatvarsha, which tells us that before the planet got named as Bharatvarsha, that must have had another name, yeah? For something to be renamed after somebody alludes us to the fact that there must have been another name. And that was once explained a couple of moments ago. We'll talk about that as we go, yeah? See if you can recall it.
No.
Oh, I didn't know either, but I just saw it 3 verses ago. Purport. This planet, so now understood that Bharat Varsh was, Rishabhdev, his son was Bharat. And Bharat was exalted, and the planet got named after him as Bharatvarsha. That's what we are hearing in the translation. Let's see what Prabhupada is going to say. Yeah? Pick up the thread, please. This planet known as Bharatvarsha is also called Punya Bhumi, the pious land. At the present moment, Bharat Bhumi or Bharatvarsha is a small piece of land extending from the Himalaya mountains to Cape Comorin. Cape Comorin is the present Kanyakumari in India. I googled it, I didn't know that. It's Kanyakumari. That's the southern tip of the Indian land. No, that's where Cape Comorin is. Sometimes this peninsula is called Punya Bhumi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given special importance to the people of this land. Bharata Bhumite Haila Manushya Janma Yara Janma Sakatha Hari Kara Para Upakara. One who has taken his birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharatvarsha, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of other people. Chaitanya Chaitamita Adivina 9.41. The inhabitants of this piece of land are very fortunate. They can verify their existence by accepting this Krishna consciousness movement and go outside Bharat Bhumi, India, and preach this cult to the benefit of the whole world. Omangani Tivirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitam Yena Asmai Shri Guruve Namo Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prachadine Nirvishesha Sunyavani Pashyatyade Sahadine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vashari Gauravata Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare. So we'll just quickly see, you know, how this fits into the overall story that we are reading at the moment from Canto 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam. The thread started, we are only in the 5th chapter, so a couple of minutes on this. The thread started with the narration of the descendants of Manu. That was mentioned in Canto 3 and Canto 4. So we picked up the thread of actually Canto 3. Canto 4 ended with the fact hearing that Swayambhuva Manu had 5 children. Akuti, Prasuti, Devahuti, and then Uttanapa, then Priyavrata. So Canto 5 is at the moment the lineage of Priyavrata. Son of Priyavrata, which we saw in chapter 1 or chapter 2, was Agnidhar. And Agnidhar married that Purvachiti, that damsel that was sent by Lord Brahma to be affected by Agnidhar. So out of many children of Agnidhar, from memory I think that 13 children, 3 daughters and 10 boys. Of them, one of them, the eldest was Nabi, King Nabi. And then we saw one or two chapters dedicated to King Nabi. So we saw Priyavrata, then we saw the pastimes or the activities of Agnidhar, then we saw the activities of King Nabi. Now King Nabi's son is Rishabhdev, which is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rishabhdev had 100 children, and of them the eldest, which was the Jyeshtha, and he was Shrestha as well, you know, he was qualified, and he was Jyeshtha means the eldest and Shrestha means of good qualities, yeah. So the Jyeshtha Shrestha, or the eldest out of the 99 out of the 100 children of Rishabhdev, was King Bharat, and that's what we are hearing at the moment about Bharat. Okay. Now, the pastimes of Bharat Maharaj is actually just in this case it is mentioned that Rishabhdev's eldest child was, son was Bharat Maharaj. That's about it. Now, and then we move on back to the activities of Lord Rishabhdev. But the detailed explanations and narrations about Bharat Maharaj will be coming up soon, you know, in couple of chapters time, you know, and there will be like 3 or 4 chapters dedicated to his pastimes. But just as a prelude, we know who Maharaj Bharat was. You know? He was very exalted devotee, but unfortunately, in the last No. Thank God his life, he was attached to the deer, and therefore he had to take birth as a deer. And then in the next life thereafter, then he took birth as Jagbharat, no, and then purified his life at that point in time. So that is going to come very soon. But for now we are talking about Lord Rishabhdev. At the beginning I was also mentioning about that this piece of land, India, got named as Bharatvarsh, as an attribute, you know, as a dedication to Bharat Maharaj, which we have just seen now, that he was so pious and so exalted that this peninsula of land, Prabhupada says, from the Himalayas to Kanyakumari, is named as Bharatvarsh. So previously what was it named as? So I went back to chapters to see if I can find it. I was intrigued. And there Prabhupada writes, I don't know the best, but it was maybe three or four words ago. It was named as Ajanabha. Is that how you pronounce it? Ajanabha. And why Ajanabha? Because it was dedicated, the naming was in memory of King Nabhi. And we just spoke about Nabhi. So Priyavrata's son was Agnidhar. Agnidhar's son was Nabhi. Nabhi's son was Rishabhdev. So Nabhi was also such a glorious king that the land was named after him as Ajanabha. But from Nabhi came Rishabhdev, Rishabhdev came Bharat Maharaj. Then Bharat became so more glorious that the land got renamed as Bharatvarsha. And that has remained until today. We still call it Bharatvarsha or Bharat Bhumi. So this is the importance of that pious of land. When Prabhupada also then says that this piece of land, which is Bharat Bhumi or Bharatvarsha, is also called as Punya Bhumi. No? In other words, very pious piece of land. So then Prabhupada glorifies this piece of land. No? Let's just pick up the three things that I want to pick up from this particular point that Prabhupada mentioned in his book. So Prabhupada, to make his point, quotes Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he said, Bharata Bhumi Haina Manushya Janma Yara. Now what does that mean? Let's dissect it. Bharata Bhumi, we know. Bhumi is the piece of land and Bharat is the Bharat Varsha. Bharata Bhumi Haina Manushya Janma. Now Janma, we know, is birth. So if somebody has taken birth in this Bharat Varsha, and especially if somebody has taken birth in this Bharat Bhumi as Manushya, as human being, the other species of life are also fortunate to be born, but especially if you have taken birth as a human being, then you pretty much know what else will come in the next line, yeah? Janma Sartaka Kari. So your Janma, your birth, Sartaka means you make it successful. So if one has taken birth in the pious land of Bharat Bhumi, he has to make his life successful, his birth successful. Janma Sartaka Kari. Then Kara Paro Utakara. So there is not enough. To make your life successful is not enough. There is another responsibility that comes with it. If one has been fortunate enough to be born in Bharata Bhumi. And that is what responsibility? What is that responsibility? It is para upakara. No, go and preach. No, out of compassion. Para dukha dukhi Prabhupada also quotes here, I think. Or maybe not in this way. But his responsibility comes with para dukha dukhi. That he can make his life successful being born in Bharat Bhumi and then go out and preach out of compassion. And that's how Prabhupada ends that quote. Yeah? So this reminded me of, you know, when Prabhupada has quoted this many times, that it is the duty of the Indians to become Krishna conscious and go and preach. He said this many times. You know, we find this time and time again in Srila Prabhupada's Vivananda. No? And then he also said that, you know, if all the Indians become, Indian body soul become Krishna conscious, then the entire globe to become Krishna conscious becomes very easy. Why? Because there is power in numbers. Just imagine how many people are there today? Roughly what, 7-8 billion people on the planet? So if 1 billion people become Krishna conscious in India, then one has to treat only to 7 more people. Now 1:7 is the ratio. Immediately, and how long does it take to preach to 7 people? 7 days? No, to make them Krishna conscious? So within 7 days we can take over the entire globe as Krishna conscious. And this is the importance of the Indians becoming Krishna conscious. And they are. No? But I think we are probably not preaching enough to those outside India at the moment. No? So that is the responsibility. So yeah. So Prabhupada, when he was in his last stage of, let's say, his physical life, you know, on this planet. So when he was getting more and more unwell, so at that time devotees thought, including His Holiness Tamil Krishna Goswami Maharaj, that will take him to Rishikesh. And there he might, in the natural serenity and in the cool atmosphere, in the calm environment, might expedite Prabhupada's rehabilitation. But actually it didn't, it kind of worsened. So Sri Prabhupada foreseeing that the end to his pastimes, his leaders on this planet might be coming to an end very soon, wanted to be rushed back to Vrindavan, because it was his desire to leave his body in Vrindavan. So the devotees rushed him back. So whether it was in Rishikesh or on the journey back to Vrindavan, or it was in Vrindavan, I'm not 100% clear. But in any case, in that particular context, when His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami said to Prabhupada that, that actually in preaching we also make enemies, because people start envying us, or plotting things against us, etc. And of course the devotees went through that kind of challenge throughout the initial days of Krishna consciousness. For example, the famous Jugu temple, how much opposition was there in building the temple. From the police, we even face it today from the police officers when we are distributing books. So all these things we go through. So Prabhupada quoted this verse at that time, and that's what I wanted to come to. He quoted this particular verse, Bharata Bhumi Hina Manushya Janma Karaya. So he said that it is the duty of the Indians, that they have been fortunate to be born in India. It is their responsibility to become Krishna conscious and go and preach. And then Prabhupada added, which is what I also want to share. But he said, what is happening at the moment? This is pretty harsh, so it's Prabhupada saying, I'm just reflecting. He said, what they are actually doing at the moment, they are jumping around like monkeys. From this body to that body, they are jumping around like monkeys. They don't know that they are in darkness, and they don't know that the entire world is in darkness. But they are jumping like monkeys from one branch to the other. It is their responsibility to become Krishna conscious and go and preach Prabhupada, which Prabhupada of course demonstrated to us, becoming, of course he was Shakti Avishavatara, but coming out of India and preaching to the Western countries, about Krishna consciousness. And then another thing that I want to share on this, in this particular relation is as well, when we see Maharaj Bharat, the land Bharat Varsha got named after him because of his Jyeshtha Shrestha, because of his exalted position and exalted and highly qualified attributes of being a great devotee. So on another instance, when Srila Prabhupada was asked this question, that how do we recognize the Iskonites? How do we recognize those are your followers or those are devotees of Krishna? When one of the reporters asked him this question, and Prabhupada's response was that my devotees or my disciples, Krishna conscious devotees, you can know him because they are gentlemen and gentle ladies. Now it is very interesting the way Srila Prabhupada answered this. He did not say that he can recognize my disciples because they will be wearing saffron clothes, or because they will be having tilaka, or they will be waking up 4 o'clock in the morning, in big Mangala Arati, or they will be only eating prasadam. No, none of those things. It's like they are gentlemen. So what does that tell me? What does that tell us? Is that it is the devotee's abhushan. Once our character is clean and pure, the other things will automatically manifest. Getting up early in the morning, having a good sadhana, a good sadhachar, a good behavior. All those things will automatically manifest when we are devotees. So, you can tell a devotee from a non-devotee just by his behavior. So here, Bharat Maharaj, by his behavior, by his character, is getting the glory of the land being named after him. Now talking about that, connecting the two together, I'm going to talk, for the next 10 or 15 minutes about about this preaching part, the responsibility of everybody to preach, what we speak of Indians, everybody to preach. And more so about association. That's the topic that I want to dive into a little bit further, about association. How we associate with everybody, how we give everybody our association, and thereby, by our good behavior, we are able to preach. It is our behavior that preaches more than our words. People will forget our words, but people will not forget our behavior. The association that we give to them, is very important. So what does actually association mean in that particular context? Yeah. Now the scriptures tell us, why I want to talk about this, this topic is because it's about being preaching, yeah? being giving association in preaching. So what is association? Now, before that, you know, if you take the analogy, in the current times, no, a product is sold with two things. You know, what does the advertising, when you look at how things are advertised, whether it's a chocolate or whether it's a car or whether it's buying a house or anything, you know, buying a TV, it is two things are there. One is it tells you what are the good things about that product. This is the job of the marketing agency. Yeah, it will tell, you know, when the advertisement comes on the TV, it will tell you everything good about that product, and it will also tell us that how our life at the moment is miserable, and just by having that product, our life will become happy. So, what is the good about the product, and how that product, if we get it in our life will be happy. That's how they hammer the point on every advertisement. Buy this product, your life will be happy. Buy this product, your life will be happy. So devotees are like that. You know? We are the marketing agencies of Krishna. We are the animated marketing agencies of Krishna to go and preach to people about the glories of the Lord. And how do we sell, let's say, this product of bhakti through not through so much of attractive packaging? You know? That also comes with how the products are sold. You know how attractively it is packaged. Ours is, what is our attractive packaging? How we pack ourselves with our behavior, with our sadhana and our sadachar. So our attractiveness to the rest of the world is our disposition, our character, our behavior. You know, how we talk, how we walk, how we speak, how we think of things. You know, when we are packaged like that, it becomes very attractive to the non-devotees. And they start desiring more and more of our association. So we play a very, very important part of being nimitta matram of Krishna, being that instrument of Krishna as ambassadors of the Lord, you know, when it comes to preaching. So therefore, when we have to give association, our sadhana and sadachar becomes very important. Otherwise, it is just, you know, pseudo. Our preaching will be, if we are not carefully, if we are not genuinely sincere, then our preaching can be very famous, you know, but it will not be effective. There's a difference between, you know, being famous and being effective. Many people can preach. Those paid Bhagavatam reciters, professional reciters, they can also preach, and they become very famous because the eloquence of their base recitation, many things they will say, they will crack jokes and all that, you know. So that is very, very efficient, let's say. Oh, not efficient. That is very famous. But it's not effective. Effective means what? Effective means that whether we are eloquent or not, but it is transforming the heart of the listener. When the heart of the listener is being transformed, that is effectiveness, yes, yeah? That is becoming a devotee. It is making an impact. So our preaching has to be impactful through transformation of the heart of the listener. And how the transformation of the heart of the listener will happen is because if we ourselves are at that level of sadhana, so, you know, there is a resolution, you know, it makes impact. So being genuine is important, and preaching is important, giving association to others. So I want to talk about association now, for the next 15 minutes or so. And I will talk about, because it's also month of Kartik, it is also month of, you know, November, when we are about to celebrate Deepavali. So my heart generally goes to, you know, the pastimes of Lord Ram when this kind of events start happening. So I'll talk about from three case studies from the Ramayana, bringing out the point about association, how important the association is, and what, whom to associate with, and whom not to associate with, and how to take advantage of good association, and how to avoid bad association, you know, through three case studies. Some of you may or may not be familiar with the characters of the Ramayana, so I'll try to explain the characters as well as we go, yeah, so that you don't feel out of place. So scriptures tell us, before the introduction to the Ramayana, the scriptures tell us that sadhu sangha, sarva shastra par, lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva shastra par. No, sadhu sangha, sadha sangha, sarva shastra par, lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi par. So lava matra, now, the moment of association with a pure devotee, we can be purified. Now, lava matra. So I try to research a little bit, what is this lava matra? How long is this lava matra? And in 10.03, you know, when Maitreya Muni explains the the differences in all the times, then they are from the definition of Lava Mantra. So of course we know that our Vedic science goes much deeper than the modern science in anything, including time, time management. You know. So the smallest time possible to be measured according to Vedic science, if I'm not wrong, as far as I understood in Canto 3, was called Param Anu. Anu means atomic, and Param Anu means like really zeroing in, you know, and diving deeper into the minus, the minus of the time. And from calculation, I noted it down actually. It is something like 1/5 of a second. A second is probably the minimum, you know, the science goes at the moment. Sometimes they go into milliseconds. But this is 1/5 of the second less Paramanu. And then it goes into Anu and so on and so forth. But then Lava Matra was, I don't want to get this wrong, so I'll just read it out. Yeah, so Paramanu was very small. Sorry, I got that wrong. Paramanu was very small, but Lava Matra was 1/5 of a second. Just out of curiosity, you know, 1/5 of a second is, about 1/5 of the second is Lava Matra. So just imagine, with that minor, you know, association of a pure devotee, one can be purified. That is the importance of taking associations. Now, our characters, as I was talking about our characters and our attributes when we are associating, giving our association to others. Now, if you think of it, you know, it is very easy to be nice and humble when things are all going right. The true test of our character comes out when things don't go right. And we face this, you know. And generally as devotees who go to work, face this possibly more than that's the brahmacharis. Because why? We face, I'm sure you have your own challenges, but for us grihasthas who are working people, now we have these two groups of people that we consistently mingle with, continuously mingle with. One group of people are, you know, let's say those colleagues and staff and employees and bosses, not so much of devotional attributes, you know, and we have to deal with them. So on a day-to-day life, you know, when things are coming normal in the office and all that, it's all fine. You know, we all come across as very good people. But the test of character comes when there are conflicts, arguments, you know, differences in opinions and all that. So in the office, a lot of times we want to control ourselves, because we are supposed to be devotees. But a lot of time we also give it back. Because it's like, you know, in the office, if you are too humble, you might not even last there too long. People will just walk over you. That is the Kurukshetra, no? That we face daily. That is our battlefield. That we face that battle. So if Arjuna is too humble every time, you know, the enemy will just run over him. So he has to be a little bit tit for tat. So we bring that out, you know, of matching to them. But so our character gets tested there. Now in the temple environment, or let's say in the devotee association environment, let's be real, sometimes it also gets tested. No? We get along very well with a lot of devotees. Sometimes there are differences in opinions and sometimes there are arguments as well. So now Trinadapi Sunichaya Tarodapi Hanukha. So this comes very quickly to us. You say, well, this is not office, this is not an area for tit for tat. So humility is tested here. My guru and Krishna is really, really testing my humility here. How am I going to react in this situation? So that is actually when the true, genuine devotional character comes up. Are we forgiving? Are we tolerant? Or are we going to bring vengeance in us? Or are we going to harbor that grudge of vengeance for the rest of our life? If those anarthas reside in our heart for long, then we know we don't have the true character. What was artificially was coming out very nice. Haribol Prabhuji, Haribol Mataji, no, with a very smiley face. So that was all good. But when we got tested, if the bad dog came out, then we know we still have got a long way to go to purify ourselves. Because no, we failed the test of character. Now sometimes of course that doesn't mean we have to allow everybody to run over it. You know, there are different time, places, circumstances and different reactions. But it all has to be very measured in a devotional framework, yeah? And we learn as we go. So our character is very important. You know, the point I was making, that it gets tested time to time. In a normal situation, it's very easy. But with the test of times, you know, what is inside will come out. As an example, when you squeeze an orange, what will come out is only orange juice, right? Mango juice may not come out. So what is inside the orange will come out if you squeeze it. So when somebody squeezes us and tests us, what is inside us will come out. Now whether the good attributes come out or the bad attributes come out depends on what is inside us. If we are inside is good attributes, then even when we are squeezed and provoked, only good character will come out. Mana apamanam hai, no? Chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita. That what is inside will come out. You know, we are equipoised, whether we are respected or not respected. So back to the three, let's start now with the three case studies that I want to pick from Ramayana. The first character that I want to pick from is Lord Ram's mother, Kekai, or stepmother, Kekai. No, Lord Ram had three mothers, Kaushalya, Sumitra, and Kekai. And I want to talk about mother Kekai for now, yeah? Now, and I want to make two points about all the three case studies. Mother, about being weak, and about being wicked. There's a difference between being weak, W-E-A-K, and being wicked, W-I-C-K-E-D. What is the difference? I want to bring that up. Because it, I think we can relate to it, at least I can relate to it. Weak means, let's look at Mother Kekai, what happened first of all before we analyze it. Yeah. She was a good person, great devotee of the Lord Ram. Lord Ram was her son, so she was a great devotee of the Lord. So all good, everything was going well. Except, you know, on the night before the coronation of the Lord, Lord Ram, she asked for this from her husband, Dasarath, about few things, about few of the boon that was, you know, kept in repository for her. So she asked for the boy. And what was her boon? I'll cut short to the boon, yeah, not going to the past tense of the boon or get, you know, given to her sister. So what was the boon? That her son, Bharat, and that Bharat is different from this Bharat that we are looking at the moment, yeah? Don't confuse. That son Bharat should be the king of Ayodhya. And not only that, because, you know, there is all possibility that if Lord Ram stayed in Ayodhya, then the citizens of Ayodhya might rebel, or Lord Ram might do something, this is how she is thinking, Lord Ram might do something to overpower Bharat and take on the kingship, etc., etc. So she wanted two things to be doubly sure, that her son Bharat should be the king, and Lord Ram should be exiled to the forest for long enough time, 14 years, long enough time, so that Bharat can establish his prime ministership of Ayodhya. And by that time, even if Lord Ram comes back, he will have enough stability in the kingdom for not to be overruled by Lord Ram once more, no? Or again. So she wanted that kind of stable platform for her son. Now, why did she want something so bad? Because this is bad. Lord Ram is the elder son of Bharat Maharaj. He is, of course, the most qualified. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, for that matter, even Bharat is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But, you know, he is supposed to be the king. So why does she play all this? Why does she spin all this plot to banish Lord Ram and make her son the king? So therein what we learn the lesson, you know, that there is a difference between being weak and being weaker. How did she spin all this conspiracy? Because she was brainwashed by her personal servant, Mantra. Now, who is Mantra? Let's just talk about that for a few seconds and then we'll join all the dots together. Yeah? Mantra is the personal servant of Kekai, but Mantra was a hunchback. No? And being a hunchback, she was always made fun of by the people around. She was always not fun. No? So she didn't like that. So that being humiliated every time because of her physical nature, that humiliation every time grew in her heart that she wanted to, no? That she didn't like it and she wanted to take revenge somehow or the other. So that just kept growing and growing. And then when she got this job of being the personal assistant of Kekai, then pride came in. To say, now, you know, remember, you were all making fun of me, but now you know who I am. I'm the maidservant, you know, I'm the personal secretary of the queen of Ayodhya. You know, when we generally associate with celebrities or with big people, then of course we feel, you know, a little bit of pride. Sometimes, you know, when we are frontline servants of our Guru Maharaj, it's like, don't you know, I'm the personal assistant of my Guru Maharaj. No? All the roads come via me. If you want to see Guru Maharaj, come via me. So that kind of position she also got, you know? So a little bit of fainting with all the grudge that was in her heart. So this made her a very wicked person. So being a wicked person, when she wondered, if she knew that if Lord Ram becomes the king of Ayodhya, then Bharat will not be the king. And Bharat will not be the king, that means Kaikeyi might not have a position. If Kaikeyi doesn't have a position, then I will lose my status as being the top servant of Kaikeyi. So all this will, you know, spin against me. So then she spun all this story to become for Bharat to be king. So she has got all this personal motive, being weaker in nature. So now coming to the point, when Kaikeyi was weak in her desire, this is important for us devotees now, yeah? What's the lesson for us? When Kaikeyi was weak in her desire, that she had this little bit of intention that my son can be the king and not somebody else's son. Just that much of weakness. And we as devotees also have weakness in our heart. We are trying to purify our heart, but time to time, you know, that old weaknesses resurface. That I want to be like this, or I want to be the great lecturer, I want to be the great singer, I want to be the great cook, I want to be the top book distributor, I want to be this, I want to be this, I want to be this. So when we harbor that little weakness, which is, let's say, natural, because we are trying to purify that anatta, but if we come into a contact with a wicked person, with a wicked association, that weakness can be magnified to the point that we might actually start acting on it. Just as Mother Kaikeyi, being weak in her heart, desiring the son to be the king of Ayodhya, met in association with a wicked person of Mantra, and that got aggravated, that desire got aggravated to the point that she lost all intelligence. And it became catastrophic for her. So you see the point? How weak-hearted, if in association with wicked people, will take us to disaster. So what we have to do is carefully understand our weaknesses and avoid wicked associations, because otherwise we will be in danger. Now thankfully, in case of Mother Kaikeyi, the disaster did happen, but she again got good association after that, you know, from her own son Bharat, who told her, you know, whatever, I'm not going to go into that. But through that moment of good association with the son, she revived her, she understood her weaknesses, she repented on her mistakes, and she purified herself thereafter. Although with all the humiliation she had to leave, but she went back to her natural disposition of being, you know, a great devotee of the Lord. So good association came, but perhaps a bit too late. Now let's look at the second case study about, you know, bad association. Again in Ramayana, from Ravana. Ravana was the king of Lanka, and we know that he was a very wicked person. He's not a weak person only, he's a very wicked person. What is the difference in weak and wicked now? In weak person, when we are weak at heart, when we do something wrong, it is not so much because we want to hurt others. It is more so because we have succumbed to our desire that was not the best. Succumbing to our desire because we have been influenced by somebody else. But being wicked person means what? That we purposefully want to hurt and destroy others, and because we get pleasure in that. That is a sign of a wicked person. So Ravana, being a demon, was a wicked person. He wanted to hurt others, he wanted everything to be for his sense enjoyment, and that was all conscious, intentional desires. All his actions were intentionally motivated, not by accidents or by something else. So he got also bad associations in Lanka, and therefore his wickedness grew and grew and grew. But when he kidnapped Mother Sita, then he had the good association of Vibhishan. And Vibhishan told him that this is not the right thing to do. You should dutifully respect and respectfully return Mother Sita to Lord Ram, otherwise you are heading for disaster. But unlike Mother Kaikeyi, when she made the mistake and corrected herself after good association from Bharat, here, Ravan, although he had good association from Vibhishan, didn't correct himself. And then we know the end. Total catastrophic disaster for him, ruination. He just said everything came to an end when Lord Ram took over everything from him in Lanka and killed him. So this is a wicked person getting good association but ignoring it and therefore heading to disaster. Now let's look at the middle point, a third case study from Ramayana. We look at Sugriv. Sugriv is the commander-in-chief of the monkey army, which Lord Ram deployed for his purpose of fighting over Lanka. So Sugriv, Lord Ram did him a favor by killing Bali Maharaj, by killing Bali, And then in returning, Kiskindha back to Sugriva and reinstalling him as the king of that particular place. Now, out of this favor, Sugriva was supposed to help Lord Ram, assemble the army king and march to Lanka to get Mother Sita back. Now, what happened here after Sugriva was coronated as the king and he got the kingdom back? He started indulging in sensual pleasures in the palace. Because he used to live in the palace, but he was exiled to the forest and he had a difficult life for some time. But when he came back to the kingdom, then he forgot his promise to the Lord Ram. And he started enjoying sensual pleasures with his many wives and all those things. Now, then at some point in time he got good association from Hanuman. Hanuman reminded him to say, actually, what you are doing is completely wrong. You are supposed to be, making arrangements so that we can get the army together to go to Lanka. So what Sugriva does is a good thing. After hearing that advice from Hanuman, good association, he sends armies throughout the planet to say all the armies now assemble at this particular point because we are going to help Lord Ram take over Lanka. So all the armies started coming, all the monkey armies start coming. But in the course of time when all the armies are coming, monkey armies are assembling, he again forgets his duty and the favor that he has to favor. That he had promised Lord Ram of fighting with him over Lanka. So he again goes back to his sensual pleasures. Now when this happens during the month of Chaturmasya, because it was heavy rain, so they couldn't really actually march to Lanka. But in the end of Chaturmasya, then Lakshman, who is Lord Ram's brother, he gets enraged and he comes to Sugriva and tells him that, what is going on? You are supposed to be helping Lord Ram in marching to Lanka, but what are you doing? You are just enjoying your senses. What happened to the promise? And at that point in time, the second... So when he was nicely reminded by Hanuman that what is your devotional service, he took some actions, but he forgot about it. Why? He is not a wicked person. He is just a weak person. And that's the point that I want to make, because that is just so relevant to us. When we are weak, we indulge in sense gratification, whether it's gross or subtle, and after some time it lapses and we forget that we are supposed to be marching towards devotional service for the pleasure of Lord, but we forget. Then when devotees remind us nicely, like how Hanuman reminded Sugriva nicely, he took some actions, so we also take some actions, but over a time period we again lapse in our concentration and determination to be sticking to the path of devotional service for good. No side distractions at all. But sometimes it happens again. We fall. Or we take the exits. Whatever it be. Then a jolt comes in our life. And this time the jolt is heavy, like Lakshman coming and jolting Sugriva to say, what is going on? And I can just finish you off if you do this, if you don't engage yourself in devotional service. So that jolt really, really woke Sugriva. Because he got another second good association. And then from there on, and of course, the army marches to Lanka, and then the third point that I want to make, and that's probably the last one, is that when the war is coming up in Lanka between the monkey sena, the monkey army and Ravan sena, the armies of Ravan, at that point in time, Ravana comes back to Sugriva and tempts him to say, that you are the brother of my friend, and me, with Bali, and we had some misunderstanding, so there were some problems. But at the end of the day, we are all connected. We are all connected. So he was tempting him with so many things that I will give you part of Lanka. You just come on my side. Don't fight on the side of Lord Ram, etc. Now this is a wicked person, a wicked association working on a weak person of Sugriva, trying to tempt him to go away from devotional service, come for further sense gratification. But Sugriva, after having that good association of Hanuman, reminding him about his devotional service, after having that jolting association of Lakshman, really, really waking him up on the path of devotional service, does not get tempted again. Third time he doesn't get tempted. Why? Because initially when he had that weak moments, now he is full of determination on the path of devotional service, being resolute in his determination. So for us, in conclusion, association is very important, but we have to be very careful whom to associate with and whom to give association. Association does not necessarily mean under the physical association of, you know, being in the office or being on the streets distributing the books. Association means those moments that changes our character or our thinking or our disposition and eventually our actions. Because at the end of the day, the actions are the main thing, yeah? So if the association of people are changing our actions for the good, that means that association is good. If the association is degrading us, then we have to avoid that association. And we have to be careful that, or we have to be at least mindful that we are weak, and definitely, you know, avoid weaker association, because that will degrade us better. At least be associating with people that are like-minded and can help us, you know, progress on the path of bhakti. Okay, I'll stop here because, you know, almost 9 o'clock. I have probably a few other things to say, but I'll stop here. Any questions, comments?
You are talking about sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha. Of course, with sadhu sangha, we get all siddhi, sarva siddhi. So therefore, sarva siddhi can be, you know, strengthening ourselves. That way, we won't be tempted or weakened by other allurement that may come on our way.
Correct. Yeah. Very good. Anything else? Grantha Swaraj Bhagavatam ki, 4 shloka Upad ki, 4.